It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are. We are off and running, raring to go on the 26th day of October 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where you go and you click on chat room and you pick out a free screen name and a free password and jump into the madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the conversation that takes place therein during the 3 hours in which this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. Yes. And, you know, golly gee, if you were to do exactly that, well, the early arrivals this evening consist of Anatole saying howdy and Jug of Punch, BT Blom. And, of course, you will be moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become, yes, Man Cave. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It really is Thorn in the Side Thursday. We've ripped through the better part of another week of progressive, non-commercial broadcasting here on the interweb tubes. Yes, we have. And I encourage you to jump in the chat room, enjoy, participate as you will, call the program later on if you wish. You can tweet at me, at Bob Kincaid. You can reach me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. Yeah, all kinds of, and email always, of course, at BobKincaid, at gmail.com. See how easy? Yes. And I need to remind you, of course, that even though this is a non-commercial broadcast, the program is brought to you this evening by, brought to you in part by three dedicated subscribers, three dedicated members of the overnight crew, the folks who set it and forget it. And those three people would be, of course, Karen in Colorado, as well as Michael in Madison, and Melton in California. So we've got a good... We've got a good geographic split going on this evening. We've got three subscribers for the 26th day of the month. If you'd like to be one of them, just, well, go over to headonradionetwork.com, open the Contribute tab, click the little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, and, you know, put in whatever number suits you. We try to raise $200 every evening. If, for instance, you would like to be the monthly sponsor of an entire program, well, you'd put 200 bucks in and then click it and set it and forget it. So that's how that works. If, of course, you despise PayPal, and some people do, then that's what the Patreon campaign is for. You can go over to patreon.com/Bob Kincaid and be part of the Patreon subscription campaign there. Put in any number you wish. And then on the first of the month, everybody, no matter what day you subscribe, everybody's comes out on the first of the month. On the first of the month, your subscription will come out, and that way you can keep track of it quite easily. Any way you slice it, we try to raise $200 per evening. We pulled up a little bit short last night, but thanks to the efforts of the aforementioned three dedicated subscribers from the overnight crew, namely Melton and Michael in Madison, and Karen in Colorado. Well, that means we've only got $230 to raise this evening. That's not bad. That's one person at $230, or two people at $115. Oh, damn, we sure do get into the dollars and cents real quick that way, don't we? So that would be four people at $57.50. And I'm just not going to go to the eight because my head's going to start hurting real fast, and we don't want that this early in the program. So thanks to everybody who keeps the program going. A general reminder, if you prefer the United States Postal Service, you can always mail checks and money orders if you wish. To the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Don't make them payable to Bob Kincaid. Make them payable to the Horn. And Boss Man Wayne will see them, and a big smile will cross his face, and then he will do the things that Boss Man Wayne does with the things that he finds in the mailbox, as opposed to the things that he does with the rebar when he runs across, say, a Klansman or a Kleagle or a Cyclops or a Grand Dragon or a Wizard or something, which is entirely a different thing. Okay? Okay. It's our second broadcast of our 13th broadcast year. Yay. Or maybe our third. Depends on how you count those kind of things. Counting. Yeah, not for English majors. Not at all. And we'll see where a thorn in the side Thursday takes us this evening. I have to say, I'm not the happiest of campers. Ferg and I are bacheloring for the time being. Agnes has gone over to help with the grandbabies, and not just the grandbaby, the daughters. So hopefully she'll be back fairly soon. But in the meantime, it looks like it's like Dan Aykroyd said in the Coneheads movie, you know, I will enter our slar chamber. I will not clean myself. The stench will be great. And life is just not nearly as much fun when Agnes isn't here. And that's all there is to it. I'd love to turn up the volume, but I don't have a volume knob. And I'm sorry, Jim. I mean, it's what I've got here. But for people who write along those lines. I understand, some evenings the volume may be great for you, other evenings not so much. Because that's what happens when you have, failing equipment. So there's that. Oh, by the way, it won't help with failing equipment, but it will put a sparkle, in your eye. Have you heard about Nacreous Nectarine? Nacreous Nectarine, the latest nutritional supplement from Horn Labs. Nacreous Nectarine will put a sparkle in your eye and a twinkle on your teethers, and you'll go through your day with a smile on your face with just a couple of handfuls of Nacreous Nectarine capsules from Horn Labs. If you act now and order a 3-month supply for only $91. We'll also send you a little bundle of useless test strips so that you can use it on your Nacreous Nectarine capsules and find out, just like we knew before we shipped them to you, that Nacreous Nectarine is absolutely useless. That's right. Nacreous Nectarine contains no actual nectarine except for the fact that Nacreous Nectarine from Horn Labs, well, it's made from only non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, cruelty-free, free-range nectarines of the Nacreous variety that we carefully craft into tiny capsules. You know, I've never cared much for nectarines, but thanks to Nacreous Nectarine from Horn Labs, I can get all the nutritional benefits of a whole bunch of nectarines every day just by swallowing a handful. That's right, of capsules, not nectarines. Don't try to swallow nectarines. You'll probably get choked. Nacreous Nectarine, only from Horn Labs, another bullshit nutritional supplement from Horn Labs, so that we can be cool like all the other for-profit broadcast enterprises and offer a bullshit nutritional supplement that does absolutely nothing for you. Nacreous Nectarine from Horn Labs. Earther asking. Now, see, that... you guys are... Earther wants to know, will it help with Ace's obsession with boners? Also, will it help with his boner? Asa himself asks, does necrophiliac nectarine... No, God damn it, no, it's not necrophiliac nectarine, you bunch of... It's nacreous nectarine. It's opalescent. It provides a pearly shine. Oh, God, what's the point? Does necrophiliac nectarine help with the boner situation, though? Well, I suppose it will. If nothing else, it'll make it pearly and shiny and opalescent. So there. Even if it's, you know, no good on the road, maybe it'll be fun to look at. I mean, you know, pearlescent and everything. Pearl? Yeah. Right. Nacreous nectarine. Only from Horn Labs. Meanwhile, Sister Carol Baker says, unless you pose shirtless like Alex Jones, I ain't buying it. How did you know I was shirtless? Is the webcam on? Oh, my God. Because it's not particularly cold in here this afternoon, so I thought I'd go for, you know, one last broadcast evening of naked radio before the cold weather sets in, because, you know, things can get really, really, right, you know, but... Oh, Are we having some sort of twisted telepathic connection there, Carol Baker? Yeah. And you know what? You can think about I tell you what. Take one for the team, Carol Baker. You think about Alex Jones without a shirt on, and the rest of us won't. And that way, we'll just sort of commiserate at a distance. Does that work? Yeah, goody. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, it is, James wants to know, nacreous nectarine, does it work on barking dogs? Well, here's my question to you, James. Have you ever seen a dog bark after taking nacreous nectarine? I didn't think so. See how it works. Okay. So that takes care of most of the shilly-shallying and funning around. Hey, don't complain at me, Marty. Marty says too much information. Well, you know, lucky for you, it's radio and not video. So you are entirely responsible for whatever your imagination is doing to your poor mind. All I said is it's naked radio. The rest is up to you. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Where to start this evening? Well, we had two new revelations of sexual misconduct and sexual harassment land in the last 24 to 48 hours. Yesterday, it turned out that, George H.W. Bush was alleged to have pinched, I presume, the posterior of a young woman standing next to him as he sat in his wheelchair. And, of course, immediately a profound and heartfelt apology came from the Bush camp saying, well, he certainly never meant anything by it. And then this morning we found out, I had a message from Kelly saying she had noticed that yesterday on that morning program that Mark Halperin seemed particularly cranky, and that must have been because he knew this was about to land. Mark Halperin, who appears frequently on Morning Joe, who was the former political director of ABC News, and who, among other things, alongside John Heilman, penned books about the 2008 campaign and the 2016 campaign. He wrote Game Change. It was turned into a movie by HBO. His other book is in development by, what, Showtime or some such. Well, it turns out he's perv. You know, the kind of perv that walks up behind you and, if you're a female, and he's feeling, you know, randy, and, you know, sort of presses his erection into your shoulder and things like that. Ooh. Just ooh. Jim says, question, do we have to get naked to listen? You absolutely do not. No. But back to the topic at hand. Mark Halperin apparently did this a lot. And you might recall that on air one day, live on air, he referred to Barack Obama as a dick. Yes, that's the one. Mm-hmm. A dick. But all along the way, he had a proclivity for trying to convince young women who didn't want to have Weinstein with him. Yep. And so now he's taken an indefinite leave of absence from MSNBC. Because it seems like everybody in some sort of a position of power has a... well, not everybody, but damn, really? And then, just before airtime, lo and behold, there it was. Another story. Second woman says George H.W. Bush groped her. And he said, well, my favorite magician is David Copperfield. Oh, stop it. Just everybody. I'm pretty sure this is not just an American phenomenon. Among other things, actress and director Asia Argento recently left her native Italy because she was excoriated in the press after going public about the fact that she was one of the women that was sexually harassed, sexually abused by Harvey Weinstein. And I, you know, one would hope that. And then earlier today, I found out there's a guy named James Besh, who was head of a restaurant empire with over 1,000 employees in New Orleans. He took a hike because it turned out that that entire restaurant group was just a big old sexual assault, sexual abuse, sexual harassment machine, including him. And so people, you know, these people are at least feeling some degree of what, Well, they're having responsibility imposed upon them. Quite often, years after the fact, in the case of George H.W. Bush, actress Jordana Gralnick, she said, I got sent the Heather Lind story by many people this morning, and I'm afraid that mine is entirely similar. According to Jordana Grolnick, George H.W. Bush fondled her buttocks during a group photo while telling her his favorite magician is David Copperfield. Mm-hmm. By way of explanation, on the other hand, family spokesman Jim McGrath of the Bush family said, "At age 93, President Bush has been confined to a wheelchair for roughly 5 years, so his arm falls on the lower waist of people with whom he takes pictures. To try to put people at ease, the president routinely tells the same joke, and on occasion he has patted women's rears in what he intended to be a good-natured manner. Some have seen it as innocent, others clearly view it as inappropriate to anyone he has offended. President Bush apologizes most sincerely." So, just, we want to understand all of this. This is just something that George H.W. Bush, because he's a revered elder statesman, and he was on stage in College Station, Texas the other night for hurricane relief, and everybody clapped and cheered and smiled and said nice things about him. Grabbing women's behinds is something that he's only started at age 88. Never before. And never mind the fact that way back when he was running for re-election and his campaign started getting a little froggy about trying to talk about the sexual proclivities of one William Jefferson Clinton, William Jefferson Clinton's campaign responded, I wouldn't go there if I were you. Oh, no, why not? Well, you know, because George there has a long history of philandering on his wife, that's why. Because he did. Oh, yes, he did. For a very, very, very long time, he is alleged to have been involved in a little canoodling with a woman who was not Barbara Bush. And I won't even make any snarky Barbara Bush remarks at this point. I'm growing. So let's not include George H.W. Bush in the list of gropers, fondlers, abusers, assaulters, and rapists. He just grabs women, and you know, for some reason or another, it's women who get their bottoms grabbed. Oddly enough, there aren't any guys out there who have had his arm fall inappropriately on their lower waist, which is another way of saying, I guess, buttocks. Lower waist. Mm-hmm. Asa says, if you have any skeletons in the closet, Brother Bob, perhaps messing around with female horn interns, now is the time to toss it all on the table. Well, let's not say toss. And there have never been any female horn interns, so I think I'm in the clear there. Agnes, the boss, and I were even talking about this, and because, you know, as a couple who've been married for 24 years, we play slap and tickle. Too much information, but, you know, there's a pinch here, a kiss there, and I'm like, and I said to her, you know, I'm rethinking all of this. And I think it's a damn good thing that every man in America rethink this stuff. I saw some navel-gazing online, and I'm not diminishing it by calling it navel-gazing. Some introspection, some self-examination coming from Tony Bourdain, who talked about the macho culture that he described in Kitchen Confidential. And wondered if, you know, hoped he hadn't contributed to make, you know, matters worse than they already obviously were. But there's no limitations. Okay, the political world. Check. Hollywood, entertainment. Check. Media, journalism, Fox News. Check! But here's the thing that just beats me. Not okay for Harvey Weinstein, not by a million years. That other creepy director that, oh, Jesus, Trab something, James something. Not okay for chefs, not okay for ex-presidents, not okay for senators, not okay for members of the House of Representatives, not okay for hedge fund managers, not okay for CEOs. And notice there always seems to be a position of power involved. Not okay. And there seems to be pretty well universal agreement that it's not okay. And you know, some of this goes back to I don't know what other people's mamas taught them, but, you know, getting ready to go off to school and stuff, you know, first grade, things get taught, you know, going to Sunday school, you know, keep your hands to yourself. Somewhere along the way, you get a few tens of millions of dollars in the bank account, and that doesn't count anymore, I guess. I don't know. But you've got a lot of introspection, a lot of self-examination going on that is well past overdue. And meanwhile, for some reason or another, none of this even touches a guy who freely admits what he has done. You know who I'm talking about, of course. Right, Kaiser Kumquat. Who has admitted on recordings, they set him up is what they done. They set him up. That ain't really how he was. They just tricked him into saying that he grabs... No. He was just speaking candidly and did not know he was being recorded at the time. But he damn sure knew he was being recorded all those myriad times that he was on the air with Howard Stern and was talking about his sexual conquests and describing the 1990s as his sexual Vietnam. Women weren't sleeping with him because they thought he was hot. And in point of fact, that's one of the tough dynamics in all of this. There's a point, it's... Once we got past the idea of arranged marriages, sorting out relationships began to become more and more complex and more complicated, even where both parties were on an even, a supposedly level playing field. It still turns out to be a chore to teach American men to not rape. John with a note says, piling on, the dangerous part of all these allegations is that sooner or later people will begin to question the truth of them as the question why say something now versus then comes up. Well, that's already coming up. And the answer's pretty easy. I've seen it time and time and time again in various situations. The answer is, I thought I was the only one he'd done it to. And I was so ashamed and I was so afraid. And I needed my job. I saw one account today from Ashley Judd, who said that in order to get away from Harvey Weinstein at one point in time, she said, you know, Harvey, I'll have sex with you when I win my first Oscar for one of your films. And the skeevy fuck responds, you mean when you're nominated? No, when I win, and got out of there as quick as she could and thought, and she said, I said to myself, ah, you clever girl. And on the other hand, she said, she thought to herself, this is a really disgusting thing to have to do to get a job. So, that. By the way, note coming from, a heads up coming from Carol Baker. y'all need to go to Twitter and check out @manwhohasitall. The Twitter feed for @manwhohasitall. Here's a man who has turned the whole topic of sexual assault on its ear. He has written the story of Claire, a powerful CEO who has been accused of the slap and tickle with male subordinates. The women of the world are treating the men in this fictional story the way women are treated in the real world. It's a game I've been, frankly, enjoying, says Carol. I'll go and have a look at that after the program. Hashtag I stand with Claire. Thank you, Arthur, for our obligatory Star Trek reference. Ashley Judd was once on Star Trek The Next Generation. Thank you. Now we've got that out of the way. So, this is obviously not the end. It's not even the middle. This is going to continue to be discussed. And I don't... Well, the great hope out of all of this is that somewhere along the way, something approaching equality begins to transpire. I heard earlier today, by the way, that on this 26th day of October, this is a special day for women who work in, you know, jobs that pay money all over the United States. If I understood the story correctly, from this day forward, every woman in the United States is working for free. Because that's what pay disparity means. Women are not paid for the same work, the same amount of money. And so as of the 26th of October, from now till December the 31st, it's all free because that's how broad, that's how deep the degree of pay inequity is between women and men in the United States. James with a note, political commentator jobs, they're opening up, Bob. Want to go tag teaming on Morning Joe? If you're clean, that is. Well, I had a shower just this morning. But I don't know if I could. No, I don't. They wouldn't let me on there. No, never in a million years. Because I can't talk with my teeth clenched. So with all of this as prologue, I thought it would be. I wanted to go back to an essay that I read over at Vox a couple of days ago. Lori Reutemann is the author. It was published on October 18th. So, yeah, it's 8 days old. But that doesn't change the assertions made. She writes, the national conversation, the women, she says, are a human resources nightmare. Human resources. I mentioned a few minutes ago that restaurant group in New Orleans had over 1,000 employees and no human resources department. No HR. And that this was troublesome for for at least one of the principal partners of the organization. And it's more than a little bit ironic that every morning when I tune in that program, there will invariably be an ad for SHRM, SHRM, the Society for Human Resource Managers. And they talk about how important it is that your corporate organization be SHRM certified. And I'm ashamed of myself to the extent that everything is a reference to something else. And I hear SHRM and I immediately think of SLRM, and I see those worms excreting into cans on Futurama, but Sherm. And there are human resource, there are people there who talk about how wonderful it is and the security and the peace that passeth all understanding that they receive when they know that their human resources department is Sherm certified. I don't know how much money Sherm is spending on that advertising on that program, but it cannot be inconsequential. So Sherm must have money of its own. I also don't know how much, what's his name, Tom Steyer, is spending to run ads calling on people to sign his petition to impeach the President of the United States. But that's probably the most useful piece of advertising that's appeared on that program in a while. But anyway, I see the Sherm ad, and that's why my pink little ears perked up when I read this article over at Vox by Lori Reutemann. Women, she says, are a human resources nightmare. The national conversation has once again turned to women's experiences of sexual harassment. Nearly 2 weeks ago, the New York Times and the New Yorker published allegations of rape and sexual assault by Harvey Weinstein against actresses in Hollywood and beyond. These experiences go back decades, and they're often, but not exclusively, related to women who met Weinstein in a professional capacity and felt pressured or out of fear for their safety and their careers to comply. In other words, Ms. Reutemann notes, these women were harassed in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Earlier this year, she continues, Susan Fowler blew the whistle on sexism and harassment at Uber. Fowler and her colleagues complained to Uber's leadership about the culture of harassment within the organization, and they were routinely dismissed by everybody, including the HR department. Sort of like the way at Fox in HR, Roger Ailes had a mole inside that organization who would immediately go tattling back to Raj if anybody showed up there talking about what a skeevy, filthy perv he was. And he could immediately take steps to try to minimize the damage from his perving. Right. Well, the HR department at Uber proved to be useless as well. They must not have been Sherm certified. Those Sherm ads maybe should be modified or region. If you're Sherm certified, your HR department won't be able to ignore allegations of rape and sexual assault. And then, of course, a most winning smile by the person speaking into the camera. But Ms. Reutemann gives a précis on the evolution of the Uber issue. And then she says that could have been, and it resulted in the resignation of the CEO, Travis Kalanick. There were no sexual harassment charges against him, but he didn't do anything to stop it, and he resigned under pressure from investors. Ms. Reutemann writes, that could have been a watershed moment for women in the workforce, but it wasn't. And here's the part that made me bark. That's because corporate America, and human resources in particular, don't care about women. They care about minimizing risk to enhance the value of a brand, which ultimately leads to greater revenue and stronger profits. And because we have equipment issues, and because the people send me emails saying, you know, when you start screaming, Bob, you start clipping, and then I can't hardly stand to listen to you, I won't scream. I will say very quietly, welcome to capitalism. Really? Corporations don't care about women? I'm not minimizing this particular issue, but shh. Corporations don't care about men either. corporations generally don't care about human beings. They don't give a flying get a rolling donut, okay? They don't give a tinker's damn. You know why? Because they're corporations, and because it's capitalism. And a corporation in capitalism has one job and only one job. What's that job? That job is to make profits. And so if Harvey Weinstein needs to sexually assault 5 dozen women, but at the same time, the company posts record profits, then under capitalism, guess what? It's good for Harvey Weinstein to rape. Obvious, one might think, but apparently not. This is no different than the cost-benefit analysis of Ford in determining how much money they would pay in settlements for exploding Pintos versus how much it would cost them to fix the defect in the Pinto. And the bottom line is always money, because it's capitalism. And the only job of a corporation within its charter is to make a profit for the shareholders. Corporations don't have, in our structure, and I'm not, you know, I'm goddamn well not sanctioning that, so don't think that, please. But the reality of a corporation is that a corporation is there to make money. A corporation is not there to provide daycare. A corporation is not there to prevent sexual assault or promote it. A corporation is there to promote whatever is necessary for the corporation to make money. Okay? It's not a surprise to anybody who knows. Please. And so, you know, I read the whole article. I understand what Ms. Roydeman was writing about. But she never drove the nail. Let alone countersunk it. She never drove it. It is not surprising that we have gender-based abuse in corporate America. You know why it's not surprising? Because we've got every other kind of human-based abuse in corporate America. Last night, talking, I think, with Andrew, calling from Georgia, I mentioned what we call up here the raindrop rule. That a coal company will be more worried about a raindrop falling on a piece of machinery than it will be about a 15-ton slab of slate falling on a human being and crushing the life out of that human being. Because the raindrop might fall on the machine, then a spot of rust might form on the machine, and then rust spreads, and the next thing you know, your machine doesn't work anymore, and your ability to make a profit in the coal mine is significantly diminished. And then you got to round up the capital to buy the new machine, or you got to fix the machine. If a 15-ton hunk of rock drops on a coal miner, however, you just go outside and you go, "Hey, you, come in here." And you don't even have any goddamn downtime at all. Because inside corporate structures, human beings don't matter. Is that so hard to understand? Corporate America was the cause of the rise of the labor movement in the late 19th century and into the 20th century. And then corporate America, having caused the problem, did everything in its power not to remedy the problem, but to make sure that the people who were identifying the problem were branded with as troublemakers, blacklisted, blackballed, run out of business, killed if necessary. So that they could just, instead of modifying their behavior, just go on with business as usual. And the fact of the matter is, inside corporate structures, the country and perhaps the world over, sexual abuse, sexual harassment, and sexual assault are business as usual. Carol Baker points out the purpose of HR is to weed out anyone who dares to complain, to not have anyone who gives hints they may never they may complain about anything. HR is not there to be a human resource for anything. It's a misnomer. And again, I worry in what I'm saying here that I'm somehow diminishing the horror of what takes place. I'm not. I'm trying to enlarge upon the fact that the horror is far greater than anybody is contemplating. Naturally, the godforsaken, soulless, motherless, miserable Republicans see, that's how it is with them liberal Hollywood elites. I mean, they literally reported that shit on Fox News. That was fucking sexual abuse central. But that's how they reported it. You got Sean Hannity sitting down with the pastor of the First Baptist Church of Dallas, who, in his own right, is a person who has uttered more racist, misogynistic, homophobic, xenophobic statements in his miserable life than some entire communities do in theirs. Oblivious to the hypocrisy of what they're doing. This is a power thing. The essence of harassment, sexual and otherwise, lies in an imbalance of power. And where a lone individual with less power than the person meeting out the abuse complains, they can be crushed. And there's a long history of that crushing taking place. What's interesting, though, is that with Harvey Weinstein, there are repeated instances in media of people sort of putting out pleas for help. The reference at the Academy Awards to the five nominees for Best Actress being, congratulations, ladies, all five of you now no longer have to pretend to be attracted to Harvey Weinstein. References in television shows, on talk shows. And nothing happened. Because Harvey Weinstein's corporation was a successful going concern. Carol points out, I was once told sexual harassment isn't something one is charged with. It's a fringe benefit. Quote unquote. No shit, she says. Not surprising. And as my kids' English teacher once told every one of our kids, it all begins in the home. Our buddy
our buddy Todd in South Carolina says, subject line, it's perfectly fine to engage in an assortment of antisocial behaviors, including sexual assault, as long as you enjoy white privilege and the status of the Great White Hope. Some portion of our population will overlook anything as long as a certain type of person is not in the White House. Trump's mental illness is only overshadowed by the spirochetes that occasionally protrude from his head like Medusa's snakes, providing cover and distraction to his lack of good citizenship. He is simply a bad potato, ruining the rest of the bag. We all know what a bad potato smells like. Well, thanks for reminding me of that, Todd. Because you don't even have to have the smell nearby. If you've ever smelled it, your brain can just sort of loop it down through your olfactory nerve and back up. Yuck! But true. And along those lines, because, you know, I'm a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, I got to thinking about something. In fact, I was reading the Slate interview with Anthony Bourdain, and he was wondering to what degree, and he says he didn't mean to glorify sexual assault, but he said that he was wondering, you know, to what degree he contributed to it or glorified it with books like Kitchen Confidential, in which he described rather graphically the hard and harsh and abusive conditions inside professional kitchens. And he made reference to meathead culture. He said, I'm afraid that I have, may have, he said, if I have contributed to the growth of meathead culture, I apologize. You see, I mentioned Asia Argento earlier, who fled Italy because of how she was being treated over the Weinstein matter. The Weinstein rapes, the Weinstein abuse, the Weinstein harassment. Well, she and he are an item right now. They're seeing each other. All these little euphemisms. As if until they formed some sort of relationship, they were somehow invisible to each other. They're seeing each other. Yeah. But along the way, the reference was made, and it's not the first time, and this is a carryover from the purity wars of 2016. Bro culture. Now I will defer to the community of color here in our Horn Family Community Congregation on this. If I'm wrong, you tell me. Well, hell, anybody can tell me I'm wrong. But when I saw it on the page there, it just kind of went ding. Bro culture. And last year, of course, the hard case, abusive, on social media, male aficionados of Bernie Sanders were labeled Bernie Bros. And that word bro was cleverly and cutely appended to other words to form neologisms. For instance, two guys who are really, really good friends. You know, they're not having sex or anything. They're just really, really good friends. They are now referred to as having a bromance. I see. And the sexual harassment, sexual abuse, sexual assault culture inside corporations has taken to being referred to as bro culture. Here's my observation. bro is, of course, a short form of brother. And it first makes its entry into the lexicon, coming as many popular changes to the vernacular do, from African-American, modern African-American speech patterns, or contemporary African-American speech patterns. You can trace them down through history. The verb, A-S-K, ask. Well, one linguist went so far as to dig into why inside African-American vernacular that so often turns into acts. And it turns out there's a very good reason that I'm not going to go into at this moment. It is not ignorance. It is not lack of knowledge. It is cultural and linguistic. And so brother becomes shortened in African-American contemporary vernacular to bro. And then once again, along comes white culture and appropriates it. But in this case, didn't just appropriated it and sort of rotated it 45 degrees in space to turn it into a bad thing. And when that dawned on me this afternoon, or this morning as I was reading, well, son of a bitch, we've done it again. Every contribution that African-American culture makes to the overarching culture of the United States, such as it is, well, it's largely a function of appropriation. You know, to the extent that you've got middle-class suburban white kids driving around or running around, going around with their pants hanging half off their ass. Ah, get off my lawn. Yeah, see, I'm moving into my geezer phase. No, I'm just talking about observable phenomenon. And using hip-hop language and throwing that godforsaken word around. Thanks. And any number of other other identifiable phenomena. Well, that's white appropriation, and it gets appropriated because you can make a buck off of it. Hip hop never would have left the hood if it wasn't financially advantageous for it to do so. Okay, the blues never would have left the Delta if somebody couldn't make money off of it. Little Richard, who for all intents and purposes invented rock and roll, would have just been a footnote in history had rock and roll not become a viable financial vehicle. But I think we can all agree that for the most part, those are net goods. They're rip-offs, but they're net goods. I mean, if it wasn't for the rise of blues and Dixieland and jazz, R&B, goddamn white people would still be out there doing the fucking Virginia reel, and who wants to do that? And, you know, thumping on wash tubs and playing washboards and, yeah, right. But it struck me that bro was a particularly interesting case study. Because we took a short form word and demonized it. And if I notice it, how many people, you know, are putting it in play without even thinking about it? What was did the hilarians just think it was cute to use the word bro and append it to Bernie? I mean, I kind of coined the term Hilarians, just because you can you can make a different part of speech by appending a certain. But this was not a matter of appending. This was a matter of appropriating a term from contemporary African American vernacular, straight up. What do you think? And then making it a bad thing. Which maybe kind of tells you what the people who were appropriating the word thought all along about that word in itself, in itself. And you know, it's different from the Hawaiian version, you know, the Hawaiian bra. No, that's bra. Contemporary African American is bro. I mean, it goes back to the that Seinfeld episode where George Costanza's father and what's his name, who turned out to be a racist, Kramer, got into an argument that they were going to design a breast tissue support garment for men, and they argued over whether to call it the manzier or the bro. These things just percolate along under the surface until they bob up when they can when they prove useful. But I thought there were, it felt like there was some sort of ugly connection between taking a friendly vernacular term and almost overnight demonizing it. So that once it was demonized in the Bernie Bros term, well, then naturally, then you know, it turns into it. Well, lo and behold, son of a gun, there. From that, it there's a whole bro culture, and oddly enough, it's used to describe and denote not the people who originated the term, but objectionable white males. And if you're sort of, if your radar is tuned to, you know, see, hear, feel, recognize these sorts of things, you kind of look up and you go, son of a gun. He did it again. Yeah. Larry points out, the right wing, historically and now, especially with Trump and his stooges in power, have done a masterful job of keeping the ignorant brainwashed by simply using played slogans, cliches, and colloquialisms. For people who are awake, it's like looking into a sad parallel universe. Well, I don't know with this question over the word bro. It's just a word. But and really, it can't, that this one can't be assigned to the white wing. And maybe I'm just completely wrong, and I'm at this point in time, I'm engaging in the radio version of playing Pink Floyd records backwards. I don't know. So, you tell me. Anyway, you slice it, though, this is not the end of the sexual assault rape culture discussion, nor should it be. What I will find interesting out of all of this is the extent to which corporate America, which has no morals, okay? Our dear friend, Diane from the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansastan, has made a career out of studying corporate ethics and how corporations, how their stated mandate to make a profit runs up against ethical behavior. But I think even the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansastan would tell me that the first duty of a corporation, according to its charter, is to make a profit. And I submit that only when the corporation's profit making is impacted by negative human behavior does the corporation move to do something about it. Hence, MSNBC today was impacted by the prior behavior while at ABC, although no one's come forward from MSNBC. We don't know if anyone will. But they were moved to not let Mark Halperin hurt their brand anymore. Harvey Weinstein did profound damage once the allegations got out. They've been happily just paying settlements along the way, just like Roger Ailes at Fox. But once it gets too big and gets out into the zeitgeist, then you got to do something. The question financially is there a way to make it worth a corporation's while to stop it before it starts? To inculcate a corporate culture where allies and people speak up instead of remain silent. And you know what? As long as unequal bargaining positions exist, so too will these abhorrent behaviors. You want to end the rape culture in corporate America? Unionize every corporate workforce so that someone who witnesses or is subjected to sexual harassment or any form of harassment has more than his or her lone voice when she decides to speak up and speak out. It's a lot harder to punish a worker who is represented by a union. It's a lot harder to retaliate against a person who is represented by a union than it is to retaliate against a lone individual with all the might of the corporation arrayed against her. But of course, from a capitalist standpoint, the costs probably outweigh the benefit on that, because the next thing you know, people will be wanting to be paid living wages and have things like health care and real pensions that can't be raided and stolen. And then, well, then where will you be, huh? Exactly. And so here we are at the end of the filibobster. If you want to talk about this or anything else, you're more than welcome to. We got $230 to raise this evening, $430 to finish the week, and $630 to finish the entire month of October. If we can raise all that $630 by the end of the month, how cool would it be if we could raise it, you know, before the end of the month? But anyway, if we can raise that $630, then that will nudge the Norsky, lick the Lithuanian, and cash the check. And consequently, we'll make It'll help out immensely. It begins with not having a deficit at the end of this program, so we need to raise $230. And hopefully that'll happen. In the meantime, yeah, we're going to take a break. And, of course, it being a Thursday, we've got the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen on the way. I always look forward to it. And if you want to get involved with the in the conversation, I heartily encourage you so to do. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
It's Thursday, October 26, 2017.
There's a lot that's head-scratching about this contract.
Tiny Montana Company's mysterious $300 million contract to repair Puerto Rico's electric grid.
A bleak picture of the economic cost of climate change.
GAO reports climate disasters have already cost U.S. taxpayers $350 billion.
I appreciate and I respect both sides of the science.
Trump's U.S. ambassador to Canada invents new form of climate denial. Plus,
we're going to get more and more of these extreme events.
On the fifth anniversary of Superstorm Sandy, new study warns no U.S. city is prepared for climate change impacts.
Hey, happy anniversary. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I cut more regulations in 9 months than any president has cut during the entire term that they're in.
Dump anything you want into the drinking water, because you know what they say, when life hands you paint thinner, make people drink paint thinner aid.
Don't give me any ideas. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, still trying to make sense of this really strange, really bizarre story from Puerto Rico and Whitefish, Montana.
Yes. Congressional lawmakers are calling for a review of a huge $300 million contract that was awarded to a tiny two-year-old Montana company, Whitefish Energy Holdings, to repair Puerto Rico's electric grid without a competitive bidding process and despite its lack of experience handling such massive projects.
They had only two people there when they got this project, right?
That's right.
So, Desi, you and I could have done that contract for $150
million. Easily. FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers say they were surprised by the unusual arrangement. Whitefish has links to Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, being located in his hometown, but the Interior Department denied any involvement. The Puerto Rico Power Authority, PREPA, said Whitefish had already bid on reconstruction after Hurricane Irma and were the fastest to respond. Now, Whitefish isn't the only small company getting an unusually massive contract for Puerto Rico. Cobra Acquisitions of Oklahoma, the home state of Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt, also signed a $200 million contract to repair the island's electric grid.
Home state of Zinke, home state of Pruitt, $500 million between them. Total coincidence, I assume.
Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rossello has defended the contract, but on Wednesday he said his administration will review PREPA's contracting practices.
Good.
On Wednesday, the Wall Street Journal reported that the Financial Oversight Board that's overseeing Puerto Rico's financial crisis is installing an emergency manager over the island's electric utility with the explicit goal of fully privatizing the public power company. Former Puerto Rico Power Commissioner Ramon Cruz tells the Green News Report, quote, "This decision is unfortunate. What Puerto Rico needs is more transparency in the decision-making process about its future, not an unelected board." Meanwhile, October 29th marks the fifth anniversary of Superstorm Sandy, at 1,000 miles wide, the largest hurricane ever recorded in the Atlantic Ocean, that caused the worst flooding in New York and New Jersey state history, and one of the most expensive weather disasters ever to hit the United States. A new study published this week concludes that Sandy-like catastrophic floods are likely to become much more frequent due to rising sea levels, and will do that soon, projecting that, for example, costly floods that now strike the New York City area once every 25 years could hit once every 5 years by 2040. And they warn no U.S. coastal city is prepared. And now a report by the nonpartisan Government Accountability Office released this week warns that failure to confront climate change has already cost taxpayers more than $350 billion over the last decade.
How much?
$350 billion. In 10 years, paid in direct disaster aid, crop insurance, floods, wildfires, and repairs to federal infrastructure caused by weather disasters that scientists concluded were worsened by climate change.
Yeah, but ExxonMobil stock is up.
The GAO projects that the burden on taxpayers will grow rapidly by mid-century. The GAO says there are uncertainties in its predictions, but it's known for being quite conservative in its estimates. So it turns out it's actually more expensive to not act on climate change.
As you have told us.
And finally, despite the GAO's warning, the Trump administration is doubling down on climate science denial. New U.S. ambassador to Canada and former Republican fundraiser Kelly Kraft, who happens to be married to a billionaire coal baron, tried out a new stance on climate denial in an interview with the CBC.
I believe there are sciences that are both on both sides that are accurate. Both sides have, you know, they have their own results from their studies, and I appreciate and I respect both sides of the science.
So this woman thinks there's good evidence that the Earth is both flat and round.
Both sides.
Well done. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I've looked at life from both sides now, from give and take and steal somehow. It's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know.
Oh, pretty song. 20 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 26th of October, 2017. And before I run over to the phones, because I've got Richard in New Jersey on hold, I want to share a note from Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, Julian Assange. How did I not mention him in the parade of sleazebags? And what of him, asks Darlene. If a 90-plus-year-old former U.S. president and current poor excuse for a sitting president have done it, along with the other so-called elite men in our culture and beyond, can a once-popular, world-famous whistleblower also be a sexual predator? A few years ago, I wrote into your program that I, for one, believed in the not one but two Swedish women who filed suit claiming they were sexually assaulted by Assange. A couple of your male listeners pushed back and said I was off base and this was all a honey trap. How about now? Could the recent and pretty much nonstop revelations of sexual abuse perpetrated by men on women in pretty much all sectors of society shed a different light on Assange? How about the fact that you figured out Assange is more the sleazy libertarian who wants to do harm to our political system than someone who truly cares about this country and wants to make our political system better? Could any of this possibly get your honey trap excuse listeners to rethink some things? I would hope so. This is the kind of thing women are up against. And it pisses me off. How about this? How about Assange raped those two women and knows he'd be prosecuted for his crimes if extradited to Sweden? But to save his sorry ass, he had the very convenient argument that this was all a ruse for the U.S. to get him out of the embassy and to extradite him to the U.S. to prosecute him once he set foot on Swedish soil. How about that? That's as viable an argument as any other, particularly as Assange only cares about himself. But no, it's just a honey trap, right? Again, this is what women are up against the world over. Well, I don't think I was part of the honey trap argument. Maybe I was. If I was, I apologize sincerely. But the shine wore off of Julian Assange for me a long time ago. And frankly, different countries have different laws about different ways to approach the handling of sexual predators. And Sweden is pretty damn serious about it. And so, yeah. Okay, let's take it a step further. What if Assange, in order to insulate himself against extradition requests to Sweden, because this is the argument, well, you know, I can't leave the Ecuadorian embassy because if I do, I'll be arrested on a warrant by the United States and extradited from either the UK or Sweden to the United States where I can't get a fair trial. And so in order to make sure of that, he constantly does what he does. Could that have entered into his thought processes, or was it all just a matter of who's writing the checks that he cashes? Because cherchez l'argent. So no pushback from me, Darlene. I agree with everything you just wrote. Note coming from Terry in Amherst. How is this possible? Terry writes. They have to ask for money every night when your filibobsters are worth thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. It's wrong, wrong, wrong. You, Robert, insert middle name, please, Kincaid, are a gifted speaker and analyst. Absolutely beautiful. Every night of the week. Would you go on as a guest on Real Time? Should I beg Bill Maher to reach out to you? You're beautiful, Bob. Oh, no, 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 I'm not beautiful. I love you. I love your Agnes, and I can't imagine life without you. You darling, precious, very important man. With much love, Terry in Amherst. Thank you, Terry. Thank you so very kindly. Let me dig around here and find this. See, I'll have to tell Agnes about this, and then she'll tell me where she put the C-clamp that she puts on my head and then makes me soak my head in a bucket of ice water to keep it to make the swelling go down after such nice things as that being said. And you know, I'm made manifestly uncomfortable by constantly talking about fundraising. You know, they've got their fundraising thing going on at Public Radio, West Virginia Public Radio, right now, so they break into the programming, and instead of doing the news, they talk about fundraising for 30 minutes. And I understand that. And nobody likes that either. But if I was to come on and at the beginning of the month and say, hey, you know, we've got this much to raise, and it seems like it's a little bit more doable and a little bit easier if we just do it on an evening-by-evening basis, as much as I despise doing it. But thank you. Thank you so much, Terry, for kindly, for such kind words and such lovely sentiment in regard to what, you know, I try to do here. And, of course, then the responses that everybody provides. Someday, you know, but again, like I noted on anniversary night, the Horn never has had a sugar parent. The Horn has run always on the kindness of a relatively small group of people who, and that small group of people is considerably smaller than the overall number of listeners. Because some people just can't, and that's okay. And so, you know, we find ourselves in the position we're in, where we say $230 and $430 to finish the week and $630 to finish the month, and then it all starts over again. But that's how that... But thank you again. Thank you so much for what you've said. It is a level of inspiration that in some ways, in many ways, is you know, I'm not doing this for the money. But kind words like that, Terry, go a long way toward making it worthwhile. Okay, thank you for the clarification, Darlene says. Darlene says, you weren't part of that. You just repeated what a few of your listeners said, and you expressed reservations about using the phrase honey trap. That was much appreciated. So you weren't part of that. And thanks for correcting my grammatical mistakes here and there. You're good. I didn't know I was correcting grammatical mistakes. I read on, what happens is I read on the fly, and my brain is trained to just sort of edit on the fly too. So that's how that happens. But thanks, Darlene. Thanks for that reminder. And thanks for, because you know what? Julian Assange opened his gob and babbled on. And lo and behold, guess whose side he came down on? Yeah. Yeah, he more or less didn't believe. Scumbag. So now let's run over and check in with Richard in Jersey. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
How are you tonight?
I'm okay. I'm feeling pretty perky.
Good. Well, I'm feeling pretty good today too. So.
I already miss Agnes like the devil misses sin, but you know, apart from that.
Well, I'm glad to hear you miss her like the devil misses sin. That sounds like true love to me.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I'm looking forward to actually celebrating that 25th year together come May 1st. So, it'll be a good sign.
What a beautiful, What a beautiful day to have a 25th anniversary on, too. May Day.
It was intentional.
All right. Well, whether or not it was intentional, it's good to hear. A good day as any to have an anniversary. Bob, this is one of those nights when listening to you do your filibuster made me a bit uncomfortable.
Okay.
More than a bit uncomfortable, actually. Well, this is one of those things I got something to say about the two main issues you brought up here tonight in your filibuster. But first, going with the very uncomfortable one, I never gave second thought. I have my closest friend in the world, and it's only with my closest friend in the world that I have this exchange of the greeting of calling each other bro.
Yeah.
He's a Vietnam veteran. I've known him for 35 years. And that's how he referred to me from the beginning, and that's how I referred to him. But nobody else do I do that with. But looking at the etymology of the word, it made me really uncomfortable about using it.
I don't think you should be uncomfortable in that context. No, not
no, no. It felt uncomfortable to me as I thought about, as you laid out the etymology of it and the history of it. You know, maybe it's something I got to look at.
Well, I wouldn't let it affect the terms of endearment between two lifelong friends. And that was certainly not the intent of me talking about it. I wouldn't let that part of it bother me, Richard.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Bob. As far as the other subject, you know, it's really important for me to get past this notion that just because I'm a liberal, progressive, whatever, however you want to label myself, that we can't be guilty of the same sins. You know? I mean, when I heard about what Mark Halperin this morning, I was a bit shocked. You know, I don't know why I should be shocked, but I was, because I always considered him to be somebody that seemed ideologically progressive and a good guy.
Well, Mark, Mark Halperin has never been a progressive. I mean, he's always been conservative. He's always been a right leaner. You know, that's why he referred to Barack Obama on live television as a dick and was penalized by being thrown off air for a few days.
See, I wasn't aware of that. You know, I've never really. I've always taken him as not necessarily, maybe you're right, not as liberal, but at least being at least centrist. Okay.
Nah, that was never my understanding of who he was. But
you know better than I do. I only started following him since I watched that morning show you alluded to. Yeah, it was Joe and Mika.
Yeah.
And if I can start off this topic just for a little bit, this morning's programming, I started listening to Stephanie Ruhle. After that, I don't know if you ever go beyond listening to Morning Joe.
I do. Agnes and I are big Stephanie fans.
All right. So did you listen to her show this morning?
Only a little bit of it because I was interrupted by Agnes's preparing to leave.
All right. Well, I got a punch in the gut when I guess it was past the halfway point of her hour when she was interviewing a retired Secret Service agent that was on the JFK team in Dallas, and he was waxing poetic about how if he had another split second, he could have prevented JFK from getting assassinated. And then he went on to elaborate very eloquently in his own mind, at least, that, well, the conspiracy theorists are still going to be out there, but I see nothing in these new revelations that's going to say that anything but Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone gunman. And that hit me like a punch in the gut. Because there ain't no way I'm never going to accept that. That was a a one-person job.
You know what, Rich? I don't think I'd say by about two-thirds of the American people aren't buying that either. And the only reason that I haven't gotten real worked up about this release, well, there's more than one reason. One, Donald Trump never does anything without a reason. Now, the way the statute was set up, the documents had to be released today, unless the intelligence community objected and the president, on their recommendation, elected not to release them. Okay? Now, with past as prologue, remember when he accused the CIA of being Nazis?
Yes, I do.
When in fact we have a real Nazi problem in this country and it, yeah.
Right, and it's in the White House.
And, you know, I, Bob Kincaid, have never been, you'll never find me listed under big fans of the CIA.
Right.
But not Nazis. The Nazis are the people who, you know, put Trump in office.
Right.
And you remember how he blamed, he talked about what, you know, the failings of Intel that led up to the Iraq War. And,
right.
And lo and behold, you know, the final nail is that it's the intelligence community that would not stand silent and began pleading with the country to please understand that he, in conjunction with the Russians, got to be president as a result of that relationship.
Right.
So there is going to be some stuff in these documents that is embarrassing to the intelligence community.
Right.
And with that in mind, that's why, see, his National Security Council said, sir, Mr. President, we don't think you should go ahead and release these. And he said, fuck it, I'm going to do it because it will work to his benefit.
Right. It'll tarnish JFK.
Well, no, he'll be able to use it to talk about failures of the intelligence community.
Right.
Because that stuff's going to be in there, how they handled Oswald's trip to Mexico City, that kind of thing. And so, you know, he'll have that going for him. But anything that actually points to a final, clear, concise, cohesive answer as to what happened on that day in Dallas is not going to be in this release.
Right.
While I despise conspiracy theories generally, they have had 54 years, or almost 54 years, they being people in the darker corners of government, to make sure that anything that would point to what the real answer was scrubbed away from any sort of official archive of material.
Yeah, including the assertion by this guy this morning that he saw that JFK's brains have been totally blown out when that is what happened. There was partial brain.
They lost JFK.
They waited, and then it disappeared. But he said it was all gone. He said it had been blown completely out of Kennedy's skull, and that's just not true. That's just not what the autopsy revealed. I mean, they've been playing hard and fast with the details right along for all these 54 years. The story keeps changing. The only thing that doesn't change is that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone assassin. Everything else has gone through permutations.
Yeah. You know, one of the little bits of minutiae, and all of this is minutiae, okay? And that's right. that's what makes it such a fertile field for people to come up with their various theories on how, why, and what. But Jackie insisted on continuing to wear that pink suit, and it was blood spatter.
Right. That's right.
She wouldn't change before LBJ was sworn in.
That's right.
And the reason she gave for it, and this is a quote, "Let them see what they did."
Right. Right.
The plural. Not yes. Let Lee Harvey Oswald see what Lee Harvey Oswald did. Let them see what they did. And in point of, the Jackie's estate still has the outfit, and it will not be allowed. They will not allow it to be displayed until the year 2103.
How about that? How nice. How convenient.
Well, you know what would be interesting? And I don't
well,
know.
Well, a lot of it's interesting, yeah,
but I don't know if it's ever been tested. It would be interesting to find out whose blood that is. Is that John Connolly's blood? Obviously, some of it's got to be JFK's blood.
Right.
I don't buy into the lone gunman either.
Oh, I knew you didn't. It just for me, it felt like a punch in the gut this morning when this guy said that. And this guy was supposed to be Secret Service. I mean, to me, anybody like that's a traitor. Anybody talks that way, thinks that way, with a so-called historical reference point of being there, is a traitor by nature. Just like Trump is a traitor by nature. Okay? I mean, he just is. If you never say anything bad about the Russians, who for all we know, anybody with half a brain knows the Cold War has never ended with them, then you have to be a traitor by nature.
Yeah, I mean, I follow you.
Do you think the Cold War has ended? I mean, obviously you don't.
The Cold War, as we knew it, as a standoff between the United States and the Soviet Union, ended with the Soviet Union.
Right, but Russia was and remains to this day 3/4 of what the Soviet Union was. And if you look at it by territory,
yeah, no, the world is still under the nuclear sword of Damocles. There's no getting around that.
Right, that's kind of what I meant. Yes,
but you know, one of the I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about the JFK document release this evening, Rich. Because I haven't had time to go through a bunch of it, frankly.
Right.
I've just seen bits and pieces so far.
Right.
But, you know, a couple of things come to mind. One, I'm not nearly as concerned with whether, and how do I say this? Because I don't want to run afoul of anything.
Right.
I'm not nearly as concerned with whether the CIA killed JFK as I am with whether they could do it again.
Well, there's no question that they'll do it again if they get somebody that runs afoul of their purposes, and they can marshal enough people to their side. The problem with having done that to Obama was that he had a clear consensus majority in this country behind him. JFK was on a razor-thin margin in this country.
Recall the words, I believe they were JFK's own words, on November 22nd, 1963, arriving at the airport in Dallas. I think the sentence was, if I recall correctly, we're in nut country.
All right. Well,
Robert in Morgantown pointed out to me yesterday that Trump was going to Dallas yesterday. And the difference is, whereas JFK was sort of in that 23rd Psalm neck of the woods, thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies, my cup runneth over. In other words, I got enemies that have enemies that have enemies. I got so many enemies here. On the other hand, Trump goes to Texas, and he is among his beloved own ones. Okay,
exactly.
He's as safe in nut country like Texas. Donald Trump is as safe as a babe in its mother's arms.
Well, he's the tree from which the nuts sprout.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, so, I have no, you know, any anything below the Mason-Dixon line, except maybe for Florida, okay, across the Mississippi all the way to the Arizona-California border, I think he's, like you said, safe as a babe in the arms of, his grandmother. You know, I mean, he can go anywhere down there or not have to worry about getting knocked off. Actually, there's nowhere he – I don't need anywhere he has to worry about getting knocked off. Because where I live, all right, and anything that's blue, we don't think that way. That's not what we're about. I mean, we're the ones that are going to get screwed in the taxation deal when it finally comes around. And yet we're not going to be brandishing our guns to revenuers, get out of here.
Absolutely not. But you'll never convince me that one of the reasons that these bold, principled heroes like Bob Corker and Jeff Flake, one of the reasons they don't say what needs to be said, namely that the man must be either impeached or removed via the 25th Amendment, is that they both come from states. You know, they're senators, so they don't have a district. They got a whole state. They right. both come from states where if they were to make that statement publicly, neither of their lives would be worth a plug nickel.
Absolutely right. They'd be walking around with targets on them for the rest of their lives. You are without doubt correct, Bob. There's no, and so therefore, we can pretty much dismiss the theory at this point that anybody else is going to stand up on that side of the aisle.
They seem to be good only at Parthian shots that don't even mention him by name,
right?
Which is no help. I mean that's why I'm at least impressed. Tom Steyer is he's been a big time Democratic donor. He's a billionaire, a hedge fund manager. He's serious about climate change. And yes, I'm sure he is severely lacking in ideological purity, but the guy is tapping his own pocketbook to run ads, begging people to sign a petition demanding that Donald Trump be impeached.
Yeah. Well, that's good in principle, but, I've signed a boatload of petitions in my lifetime since I was old enough to vote, and I ain't seen nothing come from one of them yet.
I understand that. I really understand that. And I am hesitant to sign much in the way of petitions. I'm actually thinking about signing this one because it is a single-issue petition. It is national in scope. And for all I know, it's relatively anonymous, but if this guy can get, say 30 million people to sign off on it, and then they can break it down and sort of, get granular with it so that individual Congress members, and the House is where this kind of thing has to start, so that individual members of the House can be shown, look, there are 10,000 people, there are 20,000 people, 30,000 people in your district who are voters who want you to take this action. That's the only thing that will change them. Morals won't, compunction, oath to the Constitution, that is all just meaningless crap to a Republican member of the House of Representatives. The only thing that matters to them is power and money.
Right. You get an argument from me there, Bob. Do you have a URL for that petition?
No, I don't. But if you watch MSNBC in the morning, if you watch Morning Joe, you'll see it because that's where they're running it.
Did they just start running it? Like today or something?
It's been running for the last couple of days, at least, that I know of. But I saw it run this morning.
Well, maybe I can find it by Google. What's the guy's name?
Tom Steyer, Steyer, I think.
Okay, I'll look it up. I'll check it out. When I get off the phone with you, I'll check it out. That sounds like a worthy thing. I mean, it might be a shot in the dark, but it sounds like a, maybe there's some merit to that. Because the way you're talking about how it could possibly have an effect makes sense. Because like you said, that's all they care about is power and money.
Well, and of course the other side of that is there's at least a somewhat greater chance of it happening if the Democrats can take over the House in 2018. But the problem with both of those scenarios, Rich, is that we're running out of time.
Right.
Okay.
You're right.
One of the things that the ad references, and you know, it's Steyer talking and looking into the camera, and he says, and this is a quote from the ad, he has brought us to the brink of nuclear war.
Right. You're right.
I don't know if you're aware of this, but there are, it's sort of not particularly a common occurrence. There's three nuclear aircraft carrier task force groups bobbing around in the Western Pacific Ocean within striking distance of North Korea right now.
I heard they were actually in the territorial water of North Korea.
No, if they entered territorial waters, there'd be bombs dropping. North Korean bombs.
Right. Yeah. So they're outside the territorial limit. Probably just outside the territorial limit.
Well, you don't have to be, I mean, you don't have to be within, you know, line of sight of North Korea to get U.S. aircraft to the target. The thing is, though, when I start hearing things like this, I start thinking Gulf of Tonkin.
Right.
And so, let's say one of our little destroyer-esque, little fast frigate or something, bobs its fantail into the territorial waters of North Korea long enough to get them to take a couple of pot shots. Well, then game on. Sure worked in the Gulf of Tonkin, didn't it?
But do you think that Trump... see, this is why I can't wrap my mind around. Maybe it's because I'm having trouble accepting the fact that I have been told that he is what you call a malignant narcissist. Okay, and I can make a case for that from what I know about that terminology, that he'd be willing to sacrifice thousands of American lives in South Korea to do that? Because you know that they would bomb South Korea in the process.
Thousands of American lives, thousands of Korean lives, they don't matter a tinker's damn, a hill of beans to Donald Trump, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably.
I mean, I'm not barking at you, Rich. I mean, you know.
No, I don't believe you are.
You know, they're just. That's just, as the saying goes, that's not a tragedy. That's a statistic.
Collateral damage.
Okay, look at how much human sympathy, human empathy, he's displayed for the people of Puerto Rico, and they're American citizens.
Well, I don't know. He considers them American citizens.
He's going to give a shit about 5 million dead South Koreans, 10 million dead South Koreans? Oh, please.
So he'd consider 30,000 American lives a good trade-off for 5 million dead Koreans.
Right, and he'll talk about how he's the only president ever to really grieve over the loss of an American soldier. Jesus Christ, he did that opioid announcement today, and he even screwed that up. Because about halfway into it, lo and behold, he starts talking about how he never drank because his big brother was an alcoholic, and he told him never drink and never smoke cigarettes, so he never did. He literally used the opioid crisis as a stepping stool to stand up on the dead back of his older brother to aggrandize himself.
He's unbelievable. I mean,
he's mad, okay? He's nuts.
I consider him. I'm not a big believer in the doctrine of good and evil per se, as being defining human nature. But of all the people I've seen or heard about over the years, politicians, otherwise, people in showbiz, whatever. He's got to be as close to the definition of pure evil as I have ever imagined in my whole life. And I used to think Bush was the definition of G.W. Bush was the definition of pure evil.
Well, see, we're getting a master class in what really is and isn't. Okay,
it's
in my book, it is still pure evil to start a war that you don't need to fight that winds up killing a million innocent Iraqi civilians. That, you know, if there's a heaven and there's a hell, you know, that's one of those that when you do that, you might as well count on getting buried in your asbestos union suit, okay? But then, you know, it's a different kind of thing with Trump. I mean, Jesus Christ, say what, and I refuse to join the I Miss W fan club, by the way. Sorry, no.
No, I don't miss him. No,
I won't take cards in that game. But by the same token, if you're going to compare things, you have to say, well, hey, as far as I can tell, George W. Bush never made a deal with the Russians to get himself made president. He just made a deal with his pappy and his brother.
Right.
And maybe some voting machine proprietary folks. But at least they weren't Russians.
Yeah. So, I'm going to go sign up on that petition, Bob. You talked me into it. Believe me. As Tiberius Disgustus would say.
All right. Well, read it. See if it's something you want to do. If you want to, that's cool. But I don't want to be. No.
I will definitely sign a petition for something that may have some merit to it. That maybe get somebody off their butt and make some change. I mean, this sounds good. I mean, I signed most of the petitions I ever signed were wishful thinking. You know. I mean, I guess you can. You know, agree with that. A lot of them were just, you know, feel good exercises and then didn't amount to anything more in terms of real action by anybody except to feel good for 5 minutes. But this sounds like something, you know. I dropped out of the activist movement years ago, being an activist, you know, and I don't think I have the strength to do it anymore, but I could do something like that.
Yeah, none of us can do any more than what we can do, and no one can ask for any more than that either. So, Rich, it's awful good to talk to you. Thanks for waiting through the break.
I will talk to you again in the very near future. It is my great pleasure to be a member of your loyal co-conspirator, so to speak.
All right. Thanks, Rich.
Have
take
a good
care,
night.
My friend. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Rich calling from New Jersey. Please understand. I'm not telling anybody to go and do anything. I'm just, it was novel. It was novel to see that someone was actually running an ad demanding the impeachment of Donald J. Trump. I mean, it was, dare I say it, you know, refreshing. And so we're coming up on top of the 8 o'clock hour. We are in the midst of putting up a $230 goose egg for this Thorn in the Side Thursday, which is kind of rough in light of this being near the end of the week and this being the next to last day of the month of October. If we close the program with a goose egg or something near it, then it's going to be extra double plus difficult to get to the place where we finish and do our Norsky nudging, our Lithuanian licking, and check cashing. So thank you to all of the. If you feel like kicking in, please feel more than free. That having been said, let's go and check in with Todd in South Carolina. Stan, hey Todd.
Bob, how's it going?
It's going, man. What about you?
I'm great, man. You paid me off to solicit funds for your show. So everybody listen, turn your relatives upside down and shake them from your heels. Because we have to get the donations.
Did you have to put the quarter in Skype before you were able to make the call? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's like one of those flats in London where you have to pay for your electricity as you go. Yep. That's exactly what I'm saying. Hey, I want to apologize, first of all, for last time I talked with you. I think I was TUI and was talking under the influence.
You didn't seem particularly out there to me, but that's okay.
All right. Well, I don't know if that's good or bad, but okay. That's cool. I just wanted to get that out of the way. Wow. So this, yeah, it is. It's just a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. But it is strange a little bit how this particular president can do just about anything, including things that would send most people to prison for a very long time, and just walk away. You know?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. That's why I keep saying it's the Great White Hope, you know, because that is a powerful mythos to support a lot of people in this country, apparently. You know, and that's about all I can say on that, because what else can you say? There's nothing else left. I mean, this guy is totally out of his league. You know, he's like a little league pitcher trying to play in the World Series. You know, and now it's dangerous. My God, you got the aircraft carriers and the. Let me ask you something. And I heard you say about the ships in Puerto Rico, and I wasn't going to bring this up. But this person, this president, has generals all around him. And you mean to tell me that they couldn't tell him, because he's such a dumbass, he probably doesn't know that, wow, this is what the military is set up to do. We knew this hurricane was coming. We have these wonderful ships that can, you know, they can go through just about any type of weather. They can be there ready, on the ready, with pallets. I mean, everybody knows the Caribbean's got is mountainous, and, you know, you're going to have to drop stuff. You got to work from the top and the bottom, if you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you drop off pallets with fuel and water and a couple of chainsaws. And in most of the world, if you live in a small village or a town, everybody knows who's in charge, even if it's not formal. They know who's in charge. They'll figure it out. You know, indigenous people work together, usually, especially in small groups. I mean, that's how we evolved. But it's so disappointing. It's just so disappointing. The disappointment never ends. Well,
and you mentioned, you know, mentioning Puerto Rico. Did you see the Twitter flame war that Whitefish Energy got into with Mayor Cruz down there?
I was disgusted.
Jesus Christ. And then, of course, today Whitefish Energy tweets, we're terribly sorry about that. That was not about the behavior of our social media yesterday. That was not how our social media acts here at Whitefish Energy, which can be translated as, we got hold of the little fucker, told him to quit it because we're shit. We're shitting in the tall stuff right now. We're a company with three actual employees, and we just got a $300 million contract. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Well, between that and the new Benghazi, I think if this guy is around, those are two big scandals. I think it's a little complicated with this energy, with this Whitefish scandal. But that tweet, I mean, everybody looks at things through their lens, right? My lens is from a person of color. And I was like, oh, my God, these guys have so much white privilege. They sound like, shut up, you little brown motherfuckers, man. We'll be down, you know, if you want us to leave, we'll leave. You know, what do you want?
Yeah.
And I heard a breakdown today. Apparent for the amount of employees they have right now, they're making $600,000 a piece per person. Right now.
Yeah. I mean, oh no, the billing, the amounts that they're billing are crazy. And what they said is that they were, there's only two employees here, but we're going to hire short-term contractors.
Anybody can do that.
From where? I mean, is there just a pool? I mean, I remember our old buddy Jay Cruzen. You know, he worked for a power company, and he
right.
got and when you know when shit got real somewhere else, they sent him in his truck elsewhere. I mean, he's strung line uphill and down Dale here in Appalachia after a badass storm. But the thing is, there isn't just a pool of, you know, electric utility line people who are just sitting around waiting for a call from Whitefish Energy.
No, you're right. And you're right. It's a selective group of folk who really know. Like, I know the guy in town who's the leader of crew because I have big trees on my property, and they're always coming around, and they cut around the wire. I talk to people.
Well,
you know,
I
understand that.
But I want to get a little more paranoid than that, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
You reckon, say, an outfit like Blackwater, Z, whatever the hell they call themselves these days, you reckon that they have people with multiple specialties, like stringing wire, in addition to just running around with machine guns and shooting innocent civilians for an hourly rate? You reckon maybe there's a talent pool out there like that in the mercenary groups? Because I'll bet there is.
Of course there is. That's what they do. They tear down and they build up. And I'm glad you brought up Prince, because that's Betsy DeVos's brother, I believe.
You are so right.
And he's in the shadows of the government right now because they're bandying about this idea. And I don't want to get up too far from Puerto Rico, but they're bandying about this idea of more privatization, more mercenary work. And you know, this guy, people need to understand, this guy comes across as like, oh, well, he's just my suburban neighbor. This motherfucker, if you really look at him and look at his interviews and read his literature, his books, he's one of these like dominionist type right-wing Christian folk. Like some of these people go over there to the Middle East, they want to kill those brown people. They really do. They look at this like the new crusade. Okay, that's how they see that, because they're all deep into that, you know, really, I don't want to say religious stuff, because I'm spiritual, but you know, some
no. Please, I get what you're. No, they're into that crazy millennialist, rapture-ready, non-canonical, you know, the Vatican even says that rapture shit is heretical crap. They say it's heresy. It's blasphemous.
Well, they know.
Well, I mean, they've been. I mean, the Roman Catholic Church has been defining blasphemy for a very long time, and they've got the burnt up witches to prove it.
They sure do. They have everything but the skin lampshade. Yeah, they do. Ugh.
I mean, you don't see any Albigensians wandering around out there now, do you?
Well, hey, people who have been lucky enough to go over there to the Vatican, it is. They got their own currency, their own, you know, museums and tunnels, and they got their own thing going. They have so much money. God only knows how much money they have. They have probably most of the world's gold. But you know, this JFK thing is funny because when I listened and watched John Barber, I used to watch his show back when I was a kid in the 70s called Real People.
And oh, I remember that. Yes.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So,
we're of a certain age, Todd. Yeah, of course I remember Real People.
You know,
back when there were three channels.
Oh, man. Yeah, there were three channels. And when I used to visit down here to see the grand folks, they would go out at midnight. That was it. It was nothing but crickets.
No. That's when the local TV station played the national anthem, and then ran the high flight reel. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced in laughter's silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and chased the shouting winds along and reached out my hand and touched the face of God. WFUK signs off for another broadcast day. WFUK broadcasts a television signal on blah, 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 and is owned and operated by blah, 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 blah. Good night and God bless. Yeah, I remember that shit. The little gospel radio station that I worked for signed off at midnight.
That's why
the very last night that I ever worked for him, instead of playing the regular out, I played Jimi Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, you were fired after that.
They couldn't. I'd already quit.
Oh, you did say that. Yeah, that doesn't go over well now. Are you kidding me? Oh my God. Yeah, man, you guys, younger people, you don't understand. There was no internet. I mean, even, but wait, in this little town, there was even no radio. There was nothing. I mean, well, now you could get some, like, stuff bouncing off the ionosphere. From,
yeah, that's when you pull down, go over to the AM dial and you pull stuff down off the 50K clear channels.
There you go. Yeah, and then I had one of those little radios you could hook up to a big piece of metal. I think it's called a crystal radio, you know, with no battery.
Oh, you could build one with a set from Radio Shack back when Radio Shack was a thing.
Well, you know, that's what people, nerds, did. You know, we had to do stuff like that.
Nerds got a nerd, man.
Hey, man, you can't hide the nerd. Just like Trump couldn't hide his crazy. Hey, you know what's funny? Now, how long have you and your callers, including myself, been saying this guy's got mental health issues, you know? And now they're finally talking about it. But what was it? On the 14th of this month, there were over 100 mental health professionals that walked and marched in New York City to bring awareness to the mental health issue in the White House. And I think it's taking hold, but people are getting a little bit chicken. But my fear is that Trump is so ignorant that he does not understand, or his hubris and his mental illness and his sociopathy get in the way. Well, he doesn't understand that because he doesn't speak another language, I think just because you translate something doesn't mean it comes across the same way. It's more than just the words. You know, things that we might do in America are just total insults other places. So we have no idea what, you know, and they could be freaked out. Remember, we're the ones who've always been the nuclear terrorists, not anybody else.
Well, we're the only country that ever used it on another country.
And don't get me wrong, I love my country. Been here my whole life, okay?
Yeah, but loving your country and pretending your country's history doesn't exist are two separate things.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're always going somewhere else and causing trouble. Just like in Niger. You know, tell the truth. Why are we there? We're there to protect resources.
But one thing we know is it wasn't Donald Trump's fault. He blamed the generals today. You noticed that, didn't you?
Yeah, my generals, that was their decision. See, I'm telling you, this guy, it's something. See, we have to watch. This whole fascist thing is taking off now. But the generals are in charge now. We're like one of these African countries after the Europeans left, and they take on the worst characteristics of the Europeans. Start the pillaging and looting and subjugation. Because they know they have an idiot, they can just tell him anything. You know, all he wants to do is go out and be praised. I mean, once you figure that out, he's easy to deal with. Oh, those are wonderful shoes you have. Oh, your hair looks great today, Donald. Oh, Donald. Oh, man.
I can't remember exactly what he said. I watched the opioid address today. Much to my horror. And there was a point where he said, I forget what it was he said, but he said, I can't remember, but after saying it, and it was nothing, it certainly wasn't lighthearted, and it wasn't anything earth-shattering, but he stopped, and he took a two count, and he looked off to his left, and smirked. And people clapped for him. And I thought, jumping Jesus Christ. And then it wasn't 5-10 minutes after that that he crawled up on the dead on his brother's dead back to do a little chest thumping. It was disgusting. And while we're at it, just so folks will know, today was supposed to be a big deal, but what he did is he declared a national public health emergency. And, you know, when you've got a great big bureaucracy, different words mean different things. Different phrases mean different things, Todd. So he declares a national public health emergency. And what that means is that there is no extra money for doing a goddamn thing.
Exactly. It's just word candy.
What he needed to declare, but what he resisted and was told not to declare, was a national emergency. A national emergency then opens up extra funding to make to make the changes that hopefully will lead to some surcease of the sorrow that affects our country.
Words have meaning.
You know, goddamn! In the last week, we've had what two? We had a bad batch come into my little town, and it's a town. Okay, it's a little town. It's a little bit of nothing. And we got 15 and 16 year olds strung out here. Okay.
Oh man.
And so, a 39 year old guy, dead, hot dose, out of a hot batch.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a story from Grapevine, Coconut Telegraph, whatever. About another girl who is apparently on a vent now because she was in rehab up in the northern part of the state and somebody went to visit her and took her some of that hot dose.
Hey, that's some shit.
And she OD'd in rehab.
Man. Wow.
And he goes through this whole thing. And of course, China is where all of this fentanyl comes from. Fentanyl is terrible. And it's not, that ain't, and this isn't me quibbling over THEY'RE versus THERE. He doesn't even know what the drugs are. He repeatedly referred to the problems we have with fentanyl, which is 50 times more powerful than heroin.
It's fentanyl.
It's fentanyl, NYL, but he turned it into fentanyl.
It's carfentanyl.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing.
One thing it ain't, Todd, is fentanyl.
No, this ain't no Tylenol, dumbass. I'm serious. He needs to just go sit down somewhere. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. This is over.
He's been dawdling on this since Chris Hayes and I called him out in early August. He's dawdled on it. You know, the next day he declared, we'll definitely be declaring a national emergency. He dawdles on it from August to late October, and then when he finally does something, he does the wrong thing. Jesus Christ.
He can't help it, Bob. He is out of his league. I mean, look at what he's juggling with. Let's put yourself in his shoes. You're mentally ill, and your mental illness is long, you know, is deep-seated. Some of it is from probably untreated STD. Some of it is just genetic.
And you don't know you're mentally ill.
And you're so, you know, your sense of self is so inflated that you will never won't listen to anybody.
We're one tantrum away from that little bastard telling us that he's an excellent driver who drives slow in the driveway, okay?
That motherfucker said again. Oh, I'm very intelligent.
I'm brilliant. I have a fabulous memory. I went to an Ivy League school.
Who the fuck said that?
Somebody who isn't intelligent. Meanwhile, one of his professors from Horton says, I have never had a dumber student than Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the dumbest student who ever passed through one of my classes at Wharton.
What's the professor's name? I'm going to pull that up.
Look up the quote. It's there. You won't have to hear. Donald Trump is the dumbest student I ever taught.
I bet he never set foot in Paley Library. That's the main library on Penn's campus. This beautiful library.
Paley. Here you go. The late Professor William T. Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, taught marketing at Wharton School of Business and Finance. For 31 years, He retired in 1982. Vast experience as a business consultant, author of the then widely used textbook Marketing Intelligence, The Management of Marketing Information. And the article is written by Frank DePrima at Daily Kos. And he says, Professor Kelly told me 100 times over 3 decades that, quote, Donald Trump was the dumbest goddamn student I ever had.
100 times over 3 decades. Wow.
And he goes on and says, I remember his emphasis and inflection. It went like this. Donald Trump was the dumbest goddamn student I ever had. Kelly told me this after Trump had become a celebrity, but long before he was considered a political figure. Kelly often referred to Trump's arrogance when he told the story that Trump came to Wharton thinking he already knew everything.
You know what that professor also, you know what she just said to me, that says to me, with what you just read from the quote, that suggests to me that what that professor was also saying is that how the hell did you, because Penn's a private school. How did you get into this school? Why are you here? Because good professors don't want dead weight in their class. They don't want to waste time grading their papers. They just don't want them around.
And by the way, you know, I just got a note from Steve in New York saying, fake professor, Bob, fake professor.
Oh, Lugan professor.
Lugan professor, Lugan professor.
Not the spitting kind.
No, not the that would be a loogie professor.
Oh my God! Listen, this can't keep going on because everyone's worn out now. Every morning, Joe's getting good now. Oh man, I've been watching. No, it's between that. But wait, there's more now because I have to flip between.
Yeah, but he still hasn't done what needs to be done. Mika got close. Okay. Mika ran right up to the line and danced a little tarantella on the line and said 25th Amendment.
Oh, she was dead serious. She wasn't even joking.
Yeah, but she's got to be careful because they can be out of a job. Because, see, here's the blow-off, okay? You know, a magician never tells you how he does his tricks. Well, I'm gonna tell you what's going on here. Everything is reality television now, Todd. And so, Joe, like I said, you remember, you mentioned real people, and I said we're all of a certain age. You remember how many seasons we watched Cheers, finally waiting for Sam and Diane to fucking do it? Okay.
Okay, they had to keep it going.
Do it because the dynamic erotic tension had to be maintained.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing is going on here. I mean, because once Sam and Diane did, well, then, you know, you had to come up with something new to ramp the tension back up. So, you know, Mika can tiptoe up to the line. And Joe stays back from the line and says everything but what he needs to say. And you know, with Halloween coming up, let's have a Rocky Horror reference. And we're all sitting in the theater yelling, say it! Say it! Mm. We just haven't gotten around to yelling, where's your fucking neck yet? But he won't say it because it's... Look... That bullshit from CBS was true. Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS.
Yep.
Okay, as I have tremendous respect for the comedy and the satire and the biting social commentary that Stephen Colbert is doing. But back when candidate Trump was candidate Trump, and he was on Colbert's show, well, it was a love fest. It was a mutual admiration society. And, you know, now that the shit has struck the fan, oh, well, the Republic's in danger. Really, you think? And this is not to say that I'm better than anybody. I'm not. If I was better than anybody, I wouldn't, you know, it's kind of like what Terry was saying earlier from Amherst. I wouldn't be sitting here talking about we need to raise $230.
Yeah.
But it's inescapable that the nature of the media dynamic is such that you've got to keep people tuning in. And people tune in, okay, you know, you tune into Fox if you're one of the maggots. You tune into MSNBC to watch a, and you know, Joe wasn't just a Republican, okay? Joe was a hardcore Newt Gingrich weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he rose to fame in Pensacola as a lawyer because for a time he defended one of those anti-abortion creeps who murdered a doctor. And then he bailed out saying he couldn't stand to be in the chair if the prosecutor was going to contemplate the death penalty against his client.
Oh, drama queen. Okay.
Well, no, beyond that, wait a minute. We're talking about a guy who executed an abortion doctor. And Joe Scarborough apparently was sympathetic enough to the murder of the abortion doctor that he couldn't participate in defending the guy against a capital claim.
Mm. You know how I feel about that. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Mm. Well, he's from the Redneck Riviera. What do you want?
Oh, he's from Atlanta. Actually, he's from Atlanta. He talks a lot about Alabama and stuff. But he's from Atlanta. That's where he's born.
Oh, okay. You said Pensacola. I think that's on
well,
the
then, yeah, eventually he winds up in Pensacola. He goes to the university. He goes to the University of Alabama undergrad, and then he goes to the University of Florida for law school, and he winds up in Pensacola. And he rose to fame on the defense of that murderer, alongside the fact that he led a massive grassroots campaign to keep people from having to pay taxes, property taxes.
And his name is not that common. That's a money name.
So, I mean, this isn't just me gooning on Joe. Okay, I mean, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, and all that goes with that. But
I brought it up.
They can't just walk away. I mean, they can't just run up, because then you're in a spot. Then you have to talk every day about why Donald Trump has to be impeached, and then no Congress people will come on because they know you're going to ask him if Donald Trump should be impeached, and all those goddamn Republicans are as scared as Corker, like I'm talking to Rich, are as scared as Corker and Flake are to go back home to their districts if they say a goddamn thing, because they're going to be walking around with targets on their back. What do you mean you think my president needs to be impeached? He going to build a wall. He going to make America great again. Bang!
Bob, I absolutely agree with you. I live in the Deep South. I absolutely agree with what you just said. Because, like they always talk about culture wars and cult personalities. Now, the cult personality, I'm fine with. I get it. You know, that's like Hitler. But this culture war shit, I'm sorry, that's just a euphemism for racist motherfuckers. You know,
you don't like what other people are doing.
And I don't like. I mean, we need to break down. We need to talk real now.
I mean, do you know that
real shit?
Do you know that simple prick actually used the opioid announcement today to pitch his stupid fucking wall?
It's all about him.
And we're gonna build the wall, and that's how we'll stop the Chinese fentanyl from coming in, because we need the wall for our national security to stop the opioids. And I'm like, you stupid fuck!
The drug
company CEOs aren't in fucking Tijuana, okay? By the way, there wasn't a damn word, not a word, Todd, about the people who dumped 470 pills per West Virginian into one tiny little West Virginia coal ghost town. not a word about the corporations that flooded this state and so many others with all these goddamned opioids. And he said, the worst of the pills, we're going to criminalize. We're going to withdraw that pill today. It's a terrible drug, awful drug, definitely a terrible drug, and it's going to be pulled from the market today. It's truly evil. What's the name of the drug, Donald? Don't know.
Yeah, don't get concerned.
Can't pronounce
with minutia.
Can't pronounce.
You can't even say minutia. Let me stop. Yeah, can't pronounce it. That's what it's about. You can't pronounce it.
I mean, I don't know if we're talking about I don't know if we're talking about oxycodone. I don't know if we're talking about fentanyl. I don't know if we're talking about OxyContin. And see, here's the problem with all of those things. As you well know, Todd, they have legitimate medical uses.
Absolutely. That's what I don't like.
Yeah, one of the ideas that he pitched today is, and now CVS Healthmark say that they will no longer fill anything more than a 7-day supply on a first prescription.
Well, if you've ever had to get pain medication for an elder person like I do, they change these rules. There's an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper on parchment, like money. Okay? I had to drive, because they wouldn't fill it in this little town, I had to drive about 65 miles round trip to get this prescription filled. Now, granted, it was lauded. However, you know, you can't protect everybody from themselves. Some people are going to abuse things and some people are not. Now, to have pills dumped in a certain region of the country, which is what you were alluding to, which is what has happened, that's because of regulatory laws. That's because of lobbyists. You know,
that's because of capitalism.
Exactly.
That's because of free market.
And see, if we just had universal coverage, we wouldn't be worried about that. You know, if he wants to do something, you know, and I'm going to be honest with you, just like they said about Obama, like the fat man that we're talking about, the pills, fat pill boy said, I hope he fails. I was like, well, that means you hope the country fails. Now, I don't hope Trump fails. I just hope that he goes away.
Well, see, it's a little bit of a different calculus there, because if Trump succeeds, the country fails.
Well, exactly. That's why I hope he goes away. And it's not my fault that so much of our populace has been dumbed down to think that they're the majority. You know, and you know, like we talked about before with the, you know, gerrymandering and the electoral college, you see, with the state houses are in control of the Republicans now. So, you know, we got a lot of work to do. It's not, we can't just get excited about these federal elections. We have to start grooming people. You know, people who are doing things right at the local level. We need to raise those people up. You know, it's because most of the folks that listen to your show, I think, are a little older. It's not about us. It's about, you know, the people in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, I just got an email from James, and this is the absolute damn truth. He thinks it's all one drug, and he's going to hurt real pain patients like me. And it's the damn truth. There is a legitimate use for these things. And you know what? Sometimes you make a value judgment between which is more important, being constantly in miserable, life-shortening pain, or dealing with a manageable addiction. And I'm not alluding to addiction relative to James. That's not what I'm saying. But there's a value judgment to be made.
I would say dependence.
Okay.
Right.
And you know, the stupid bastard, you know, because he climbed up on his dead brother's back to thump his own chest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the way he did that was what he did when he got there was he compared alcoholics to people who have opioid addictions. He really, really did that. And
when he's ignorant.
Go ahead, Bob. No, I'm sorry. I just because you know I'm so used to gay people being compared to pedophiles and people wanting to get married to being compared to bestiality. It took me a minute, and it kind of went by me, and I went, "Holy shit!" He just compared opioid addiction to alcoholism.
See, people can develop a dependence or an addiction or a habituation to almost anything. Now, to compare alcohol and pills or opioids is ridiculous because in our society, and I'll give you, in our society, alcohol is everywhere. It's like food. Like if you get a food addiction, if you're bulimic or anorexic or something like that, that's a hell of a thing to deal with because you have to eat. You have to, you know, there's food everywhere. You know, there's alcohol everywhere. You go out to eat with a group, you know, let's say you were at work and you're going out to a function. Of course, they have wine and everything, and you have to see that and smell it, and those are triggers, okay? There's not going to be, you don't have to look at pills. You don't have to see people take pills all the time. You don't, it's different.
But yeah,
he doesn't have the intellectual sophistication to figure that out because he's a fucking dumbass.
And unless your alcoholism gets all the way to the point of like delirium tremens, which you've got to get a long way to get, there's nothing that compares with dope sick. And people who have never been dope sick don't know what dope sick is. Every pain receptor in your body begins to scream.
This is a big.
Well, you know, you call in, Todd, and I just make you so damn happy.
You know, you're just happy-go-lucky Bob, man.
That's Little Ray of Fucking Sunshine, that's me.
So listen, I'm just happy in a way that the Republican Party is splintering, like into the know nothings
but Todd, it's not. I didn't see any splintering on that vote to screw people who have been screwed by banks the other night. They voted like a real live
vote?
Honest to God.
How did Flake vote?
I
know Corker voted for it, but I don't know if Flake did.
Yeah, he did. And so did McCain. And so did McCain.
That's what I wanted to ask you. God, see, I want to see if Flake. If they're going to stay in there, they need to vote against everything. Not everything, but if he's
as big a danger as Flake says he is and Corker says he is, the only way to stop him is to vote with the Democratic majority every damn time.
Exactly. If you're not going to leave
even if it's the kind of conservative right wing anarcho-fascist legislation that gives you a chubby, you still got to vote with the Democratic majority if the guy is as dangerous as you say he is. Plain and simple. No, the only here's the weird part. The only two Republicans who voted against that bill were Lindsey Graham and John Kennedy from Louisiana. That's how the 50-50 tie came about, which was then broken by Vice President and man of God who won't eat with anybody but his wife or mother, Mike Pencilneck Geek.
Oh, that weirdo. Yeah. Our next.
Yeah. So I don't see any fracturing taking place. Forgive me, but you know I just don't.
Well, that's okay. I think we disagree on that. We'll see what happens. I think that in the near term, no. But I say over the next few months, I don't know. There's two ways this can go. If this person who appears to be president takes us to war, then of course it's going to galvanize the Republicans and they'll be a unit again. But I think that there are factions who want to make a name for themselves and they want to grow the party because they can't really grow the party the way it is now. And it's just a party of hate.
Well, but factor into this too. These things don't happen in a vacuum. There was a reason that Dana Lush, that spokes creep over at the National Rifle Association, the most powerful, wealthiest domestic terror organization in the United States, put out another video not too long back in which she said there were unprecedented attacks on our president. You know, what that, you know, that represents the further weaponization of the NRA's membership, so that if any Republican does dare to speak out against Donald Trump, well, the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals know what to do.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You're back to that.
And on the other side of that, once upon a time, back in the bad old days of the Roman Republic, long before Gaius Marius or Sulla or Caesar or any of those guys, in the days of the Republic itself, back during the Punic Wars, there was an old senator codger named Cato the Elder, and he had such a hard on for Carthage after the First Punic War that he was intractable. You know, people walking through the streets of Rome one way, "Well, good morning, Cato the Elder," and you know what's he reply? "Carthago delenda est." Carthage must be destroyed. And we'd like to, and, you know, he's at a dinner party. What's our topic? What's our symposium topic going to be this evening? How about you, Cato? "Carthago delenda est." Carthage must be destroyed. And you know what? Eventually, the Romans went and destroyed Carthage. And there has, there has got to be a certain number of people who will say, "Trump must be removed from office." I don't care. You know, aren't these waffles just delicious, Senator? Trump must be removed from office. As my old classics professor back in Missouri once said, it got so bad that they didn't invite Cato to parties anymore. But Cato got his way. Because you have to say the message and you have to repeat the message so often that people cannot help but hear it every time they think of you. So what?
That's kind of the feeling I got from Mika yesterday and this morning. In her affect, the way she was saying it. Like when, you know, but like you're saying, they're for profit media. They got to keep the
by the way, just a quick moment of happy. I'm telling tales out of school, mm-hmm. but I'm going to share this, and I hope it won't be won't cause me trouble. We have another member of the Horn Family Community Congregation now that is performing experiments with the char griller acorn cooker.
Oh, great. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Brother Deacon Asa burned his in just this past weekend.
Go ahead, Deacon.
And and by the way, I should let you know, I took that dough recipe of yours, you know, with the yogurt.
Yeah.
And I got creative with it.
Uh-oh.
So instead of using regular plain Greek yogurt, which is sour as hell,
right?
I used some vanilla yogurt and added a little bit of sugar to the pizza dough.
Uh-oh.
And you know, worked it out, you know, and, you know, got it on the pan and then covered it in mascarpone, you know.
Mm.
And, mm-hmm. and some various and sundry fruits and berries.
Oh, shoot.
And,
that sounds like a strudel.
And then drizzled a balsamic reduction across it and baked it in the acorn. You know, the whole thing.
No, in the acorn?
Oh, yeah, on the pizza stone at about 700 degrees.
Shit. What did that take, like 3 minutes?
Yeah, it was done in a minute, and it was gone even faster. And the whole and the whole thing probably cost every bit of $2.75.
Did you get the aroma when that yogurt?
Oh yeah, no. It's a beautiful thing. But I also had I had the vanilla and the sweet going for me. It was all, you know,
right.
Kinda, yeah. You said strudel, kind of like, you know, coffee cake pastry or something like that, only not as flaky and
right.
fluffy, but it was crispy and
right.
crunchy and a little bit carboniferous on the bottom, and that roasted fruit, and holy mackerel.
That sounds wonderful. You got me. I was curious about using the flavor. I just wanted to try it traditional, you know, because this was the first time I did it. But I could see making flatbread with it too, like just to dip, you know, for something to dip
hummus. Oh yeah. Well,
you know,
and the thing is, with it's really nifty with this pizza stone that I've got. If you keep the smoking stone below it so that you don't have direct heat, but you can still build up a good 700-degree fire. And you use the pizza stone, and you know you dust it with cornstarch, and you pop the pizza on there with the split, and you shut it, and you know pop that sucker back open pretty quick because it bakes pretty quick, and the crust gets all bubbly and stuff all the way around, and the fruit sort of with that kind of heat, the fruit sort of falls apart pretty fast.
Right.
I had some peaches and some plums and some blueberries, and some raspberries. Couldn't find any strawberries. I threw on a couple of ripe bananas, that sort of thing. And then, you know, on top of it, that balsamic reduction, because I was at Kroger's a few months back, and they had brought in some incredibly expensive balsamic vinegar, which nobody bought. And so,
oh yeah, that's the best kind.
and so it goes into the cutout bin.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, a quart of this stuff that was $18 was, you know, $1.75. It was
no
something.
Way.
It was something stupid. I bought like eight. I bought everything. I bought eight bottles of it. I bought what was in the basket.
I love that. I think that's great.
So I was able to take a whole bottle and just put it in a saucepan. Put it on enough heat to get it simmering, and then just let it reduce by half to the point it was, you know, it was balsamic syrup at that point.
Oh shit! Oh man! Now, how many quarts do you have?
I think I've got seven.
Oh man, you might be onto something. You can experiment. You have enough to experiment.
Yeah, I mean, being real live Italian, honest to God, from Modena, balsamic. It was liters, not quarts, but yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, we have to do something to take the mind off of this terrible situation, and you have to eat. So,
yeah.
You know, and there's another acorn in the family, and that's a big plus. That's a big plus because it.
They even make that Acorn Junior, and it's like $140. You know, the big one's more fun though, because you can do more with it.
Yeah, it'll burn for 2 days if you do it. It'll burn for a while, not 2 days,
yeah.
It'd be like cheating.
But I'd love to if I ever had the spare money, I'd buy one of those computer controlled fans that goes on the damper. and there are sensors that you put. You know, one just hangs in the air inside the unit, and another one, like, clips to the grill plate. And then there's another probe that goes into whatever you're cooking. And whatever you set the temperature for on the control unit to the fan, it will feed precisely enough air onto the fire to keep that temperature exactly where you want it.
Oh, hell no. I like that. So we can watch the game and let the food do what it has to do.
Yeah, if you're not absolutely committed that day and you don't want to just sit out there and drink beer and tend the fire, you don't have to.
Right.
The only problem is the units I find are like $50 more than the damn grill cost retail.
Well, come on, it has to withstand all that heat, you know, and the computer components. Ah, man.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just anxious. We'll see what happens if
Well, you still got enough warm weather left. You've got grilling left. It's getting a little cold here, or a little coolish at least. But You know, I'm absolutely committed come Thanksgiving, and we can start talking about Thanksgiving now because we're close. Come Thanksgiving,
right.
There will be a turkey sitting on a Foster's beer can inside that acorn.
I love that recipe. And if you can, I know you're going to brine it. You know,
oh, hell yeah. That's what the 5-gallon Lowe's bucket's for.
You know, yeah. Well, we have to do a whole segment on the cooking because there's so much. That you know, I've been through a few pizza stones, and my problem is that I don't like to follow directions. And when they say make sure it's thoroughly dry before you heat it up, yeah, there's a reason for that because that sucker will crack.
Oh,
it will crack.
If it's wet enough, it'll explode. That's a lesson I learned the hard way, too. Well, Todd, it's been a wonderful conversation. I do appreciate you calling in. It's been a dandy. And we've been all over the place, but that's usually where we go anyway.
Take care, Bob.
All right, we'll see you, Todd. Later.
Okay.
Calling from down South Carolina way, that's our buddy Todd, as Arthur pointed out. And we're back with Grillin' and Illin' with Bob Kincaid. The food brings the grillin' and the politics bring the illin'. Well, by God, Arthur, that's worth a cowbell. Arthur said, Lowe's bucket, it's Home Depot. Die, heretic! Well, see, I've only got Lowe's. We don't got no Home Depots around here. Don't got no. Yeah. Because I'm a practitioner of the art of word knowing. If I say don't got no, I meant to say don't got no. Or I can wax eloquent in standard speech as well. Yes. Yeah, there, Brother Deacon Ace is getting in on it too. Welcome to Southern Food Orgy. Southern Food Orgy with your host, Bob Kincaid. And I noticed, I had the question the other night, has your neighbor started burning coal yet? And son of a bitch. Yep, we're there. We're there. It's that time of year. Ah, coal smoke. Sickly, sweet smells of death. Yeah, James, you're right. There is one more probe, and you know where it goes, James says. Well, yes. Yeah, Devin. Yeah, you get one, too. Altered carbon flatbread. Exactly. Oh, it's been an enjoyable evening. I hope you've enjoyed it. I love the conversations we had tonight. I'm sorry we didn't get to as many calls as we would have liked to. At some point in time, you know, we'll maybe we'll, you know, add another line. There's, you know, get a gizmo box and add another phone line, and hopefully people will be able to hear each other and all kinds of fun stuff like that. But that's, you know, that's down the road too. So, and by the way, during the course of the evening, fundraising just got a little more difficult because we started at 230 to go and we're still at 230 to go. Sorry, I wish it was otherwise, but it isn't. So there we go. Yeah, Jim pointed out that Todd is. He said Todd's near my hometown. Say hi to Todd. Say hi to the folks back home too, Todd. Yeah, you're right from the same. Same neck of the woods. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. Good show tonight. He says, good night and keep up the good fright. Well, I don't mean to scare folks. It just winds up being scary for me, too. I guess that's how it works. One last thing to share with you before the evening closes out. I got an email last night after I got an internet last night. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. I got an email last night from. I'm pulling it up here. I'll get there in a minute. Just kind of a long way to go. Wait a minute, I missed it. Ah, there we go. PD,
PD wrote in. Hi, PD. Subject line, the Christian left. This is in regard to prayer meeting Wednesday. PD said, I hope I got the mail right. I couldn't find any other on your site, and I don't tweet. You know, BobKincaid@gmail.com always gets through. PD said, mostly enjoy your show, but really must say your portrayal of Christians is really one-sided. There are plenty of us out here who do not worship Rush, Mammon, the GOP, or Orange Tiberius, or insist that everyone believe what we believe, and are all for progressive social issues. It's just that, for some reason, we never get heard. Anyway, many parts of your show are thought-provoking and interesting. It just really hurts sometimes when you really drill into Christians as all of one color, and that a really grim one. Thanks for reading. Respectfully, PD. And I wanted to make sure and share that with you because I want to make some things clear about that. The problem with Christianity is that I can't solve them because I'm not one. I was raised as one. I learned a whole bunch about it, and that's when I walked away because I saw what was going on. That's not to say other people should or shouldn't. That's the thing. Religion is not something you know. Religion is something you believe. But the problem with, and I understand PD's argument, but the problem with it is that, as PD says, for some reason, the progressive social issue Christians never seem to get heard. And that's, and from my perspective, that is because Christianity has been defined by the weirdos, by the Roy Tola Moores of the world, by the Robert Jeffresses, by the Tony, yes, Mother Bates, Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins of the Family Research Council, by the Jim Bakers, and by the former liquor supply officer, Pope of Pentecostalism, Pat Robertson's, by Dr. James Dobson and Focus on the Family out in Colorado Springs, who couldn't put a doctor who couldn't put a Band-Aid on somebody without killing him. They've defined Christianity. And it is the dominant strain of Christianity. I want to be gentle in my answer here. Because I have respect for those strains of Christianity that aren't these merchants of hate. But they aren't. They are not. They're not cleaning their own house. Until such time as someone is able to formulate a doctrinal theological statement, because the God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals have no problem, PD, saying that you aren't really a Christian, that you aren't going to heaven. Okay? They have no problem saying that. But the decent Christians won't say that about the people who are the most vicious argument against Christianity itself. And the vast majority of Christianity in this country, you know, the largest single Protestant denomination is the Southern Baptist Church. I don't know what that percentage is relative to, say, Roman Catholicism, but the American Conference of Catholic Bishops proves every time they open their mouths that they're more than happy to muck about in politics, and they're not out there being particularly liberal. And so, you know, Christianity is defined by its dominant strain. And whether it be the United Churches of Christ or the Congregationalists or what have you, they are a distinct and tiny minority. So maybe, and this is just a suggestion from somebody who isn't inside, maybe a good place to start would be to openly declare that people like Roy Moore have foregone the saving grace of Christ Jesus. That the Moores and the Perkinses and the Dobsons and the Bakers and the Creflo Dollars and the Pat Robertsons and all the people who follow them aren't Christians. That they do not partake of salvation. Because until such time as liberal progressive Christianity is willing to take a stand and say that those people are not Christians, they're going to continue to define what Christianity is. Oddly enough, we demand that Muslims, and I'm not saying you do, PD, oddly enough, we demand that Muslims renounce every single terrorist act. And we've even gone so far as to insist that that peaceful imams declare that they are heretics and are outside of and that they are outside of the orthodoxy of the teachings of Islam. Where are those statements from the people who live Matthew 25 instead of living the hellfire and brimstone of the Old Testament juvenile delinquent in the sky? That's my only question. So when you, PD, when you hear me beating on Christianity, I'm beating on the Christianity that is defined as the dominant Christianity in this country. So, you know, I hope that helps a lot, and helps a little bit, and I really, really thank you. I sincerely thank you for your note. And I hope at least, you know, maybe you know where I'm coming from now. So lo and behold, we're out of time. Thanks to everybody. Thanks for the conversation. Thanks for the emails. Thanks for the tweets and the Facebooking. I enjoy the conversations we have all day long, even when the program's not going on. I really, really do. Thanks to everybody who keeps the program going. Thanks to everybody who shares any portion of their precious finite time on this little blue-green time machine hurtling in its helical elliptical orbit through the universe. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.